You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
How sweet it is! The break is almost finally over. With that, welcome in to Tuesday's episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. We are now officially within about 48 hours of the Rockets returning to the court on Thursday night, a big showdown against the LA Lakers, LeBron James, nationally televised on TNT. It's an obvious big game for the Lakers, who at 28-29, below 500, currently out of the Western Conference playoff picture. They need a very strong finish over the final 25 games just to get in the playoffs. Missing it would be a massive failure with LeBron James in one of his remaining prime years, whatever is left of that, at age 34. So obviously it's a big game for them. But it is for the Rockets as well, because at 33-24, the number 5 seed in the West, Houston, while not as extreme as LA in terms of the level of underachieving, they are below where most fans and certainly the organization expected them to be. And there's an extremely tough game on Saturday night against the defending champion Warriors at Oracle, a Golden State squad that's going to be extremely hungry and ready to beat the Rockets after losing both of the first two games, including that all-time classic in early January that Harden won in overtime with his step-back three over Klay Thompson and Draymond Green. So if Houston loses on Thursday in LA and then loses Saturday at Oracle, even though the schedule does ease up when they get back home starting next Monday against the Hawks, at the same time, you'd now be 33-26, only 7 games above 500, and in all likelihood, and the 6 or 7 seed in the Western Conference playoff picture at the moment, rather than the 5. So for a final 25-game stretch in which the Rockets have spoken openly about needing to go on an extended run, now that we presume Clint Capella will be back and all of your big three, all of your big guns finally healthy at the same time, we'll get final word tomorrow, I assume, once Clint Capella goes through the first Rockets practice after the week, assuming his thumb responds as they expect. Well, for the Rockets to go on that run, 17-8 or better, step one is to get to 50 wins, as stated by owner Tillman Fertitta in his recent interview with the Chronicle. More on that momentarily. Well, you don't want to start off 0-2 if you want to go 17-8, or as I've suggested, even 19-6, 20-5, if you truly want to make a run at a top three seed, chasing down Denver or Oklahoma City, teams that are somewhere between 4 and 6 games in front of you, and potentially getting not only home court advantage in the first round, but also on the opposite side of the bracket from Golden State. So considering how difficult that game is Saturday night in Oracle, well, Thursday at Staples is an obvious big win for the Lakers given their record and that they're out of the playoffs at the moment, but it's a sneaky big one for the Rockets as well. You don't want to lose it and then be going into Oracle on the second game of this tough California road trip. Anyway, we'll have more talk on those individual games in the days ahead. We have plenty of time to preview and recap whatever goes on there. For this episode on the Tuesday before the All-Star break, we're going to take one more show to think bigger picture with the Rockets at the midway point. Well, I guess they're two-thirds in, but it's the week-long All-Star break to where everyone can finally decompress, reset, whatever you want to call it, before getting back on the court starting Thursday for that final 25-game kick. And for the Rockets, it's not just about what happens on the court, but off the court as well, because this roster is not a finished product. At the moment, they only have 12 players. They are required to add at least 2 by Thursday. We'll be talking more about that in the second segment. Also, in the third and final segment, I don't want to make it seem like I'm ignoring the hot take of the day when it comes to the Rockets. If you've paid attention to First Take or any of the national shows, you've seen a lot made of recent James Harden rumors, gossip, things that were allegedly said between Harden and Stephen Curry at the All-Star game. To me, I don't know that it's a non-story. I think it's overblown, but I don't want to make it seem like I'm ignoring it altogether. Potentially down the road, of course, it could have an angle, but for now, I largely see it as irrelevant. That's why I'm not going to lead with it. That's why I haven't discussed it to this point. However, before we get back into the nitty-gritty, the micro of game-by-game analysis, I do think it's important to discuss it today in our big picture show. So as far as what we know, we'll get to that in the third segment. But as far as leading off, I want to discuss the things that are more concrete, which largely goes back to that aforementioned interview from Rockets owner Tillman Fertitta, given to longtime Rockets beat writer Jonathan Fagan of the Houston Chronicle. And first off, I'll say it, this interview felt inevitable. Fertitta had taken such a beating in at least the Rockets' online community, social media, message boards, those types of things, and I don't think it's always been fair. I've explained it why in my shows over the past couple of weeks. Once the trade deadline passed and then the buyout, the first wave, the Rockets not landing Markieff Morris after attempting to get him here, I think part of that had to do with minutes. As far as not making a move bigger than Iman Shumpert at the trade deadline, I think some of it had to do with the Rockets just simply lacking assets to get in the game as far as expiring contracts, future first-round picks that are considered desirable around the league. As far as what it takes to land a bigger splash than Shumpert, well, number one, not that many huge names were dealt at the deadline. And as far as those that were, like, say, Nikola Mirotic, who I know some Rockets fans wanted, well, the Rockets did not have the expiring salaries that New Orleans wanted in order to do that deal. So, really, I think while clearly finances have had at least something to do with these decisions, at the same time, I think some of it just comes down to assets and minutes and things that are not really within the owner's control. However, Fertitta, as a new owner without much of a track record and in a season where the Rockets are below expectations, it's not fun to say, well, we don't have the assets or teams don't want our guys, because all of that is really out of your control. The one thing that fans see that they can sort of touch and feel that it should be within their organization's control is the spending of the owner. And so when you have a season that is below expectations record-wise, when the trade deadline comes and goes without a major move, and you see that despite these things, the owner is cutting cost and potentially realizing financial savings just for himself and the organization, you put these things together and he becomes an easy punching bag. That said, I don't think it's really fair, because the reason the Rockets didn't make a bigger splash, and of course the reason for the record, it's not because of a lack of investment. Quite frankly, you're paying Chris Paul nearly $40 million a year for the next 4 years, more than that. And some of those, you certainly shouldn't look at that as a cheap team. I just think that that's the easy punching bag for a lot of fans. And at some point, it makes sense to push back on that. Maybe not while the games are actually going on, because you don't want to overshadow the on-court activities. But with this being a week off, it's the appropriate point to do it. And of course, Jonathan Fagan in the Chronicle is the appropriate writer to get the story, because he's by far the longest tenured member of the Rockets media corps here in Houston. You can find the full article at HoustonChronicle.com or at Jonathan's Twitter page at Jonathan_Fagan. You can get the link there. But the money quotes that I'll read here, talking about the luxury tax, that had no bearing whatsoever on any decision that was made. If we could have gotten another player, someone we were trying to pick up last week that didn't work out for us, it would have put us back over the luxury tax. I still don't know that we'll be under when it's all said and done. There's also a separate part in which he addressed the losses of guys like James Ennis, Brandon Knight, as saying it made no sense to keep them here when they weren't going to play, alluding to the nine-man rotation that I've been discussing. And then as far as Markieff Morris, who he can't identify by name, but you know that's who he's talking about, Fertitta says, remember, not only do we have to want somebody, somebody has to want to come here. Some of these guys, they want to know what kind of minutes they're going to get. We're not going to tell somebody they're going to get a lot of minutes if they aren't. So as far as my thoughts on it, I don't buy it entirely, because clearly no bearing whatsoever. I think that's a stretch. There are reasons to where if you duck the tax this year because it could avoid being in the repeater tax or the entirety of the four-year Chris Paul contract, that's a perk for an owner who previously has called the repeater tax a horrible hindrance, and he is far from alone in that. That's why most teams in the NBA will not pay it, and that's why I have a hard time getting worked up about it, saying, oh, the Rockets are too cheap, when most teams would do the exact same thing. But James Ennis in particular, while he was not the Trevor Ariza fill-in that a lot of us thought or hoped he would be going into the season, at the same time, a guy who's athletic, physical, 6'7", 6'8", and shooting 37% or so from three, clearly, he's better, most likely, than whoever you can get on a 10-day contract. So I reject that, the idea that it had nothing to do with money, because even if he's not in your rotation, then Ennis would have been very useful into the bench depth for emergencies, because even though they're probably healthy now, assuming Capella gets cleared, at the same time, injuries come and go, and you're likely to have another stretch in which he conceivably could play. So I think a more apt way of putting it is that the luxury tax is not going to deny Houston revenue or potential salary in all circumstances. It's just James Ennis as your 10th man was not enough. And by the quote saying something they worked on last week, if it were worked out, would have put them above the tax. To me, what that might indicate is that Markieff Morris, had he chosen Houston, would have gotten a portion of their mid-level exception, because the Rockets had and have room to sign one player to the minimum. So to say that the thing they were working on, if it had worked out, that it would have pushed them above the tax, to me, it is an indication that for the right guy, that $3.5 million that's left of your mid-level exception, that could still be on the table. Maybe that's used to get Daniel House on a 2 or 3 year deal instead of a 1 year. Maybe there's someone else by March 1st, the deadline for players to be released in order to be eligible for the playoff roster on another team. Someone like Markieff Morris, comparable in ability, shakes free that we're just not aware of yet. And then the Rockets would still have the financial leg up over most teams who can just offer the minimum. So what I think that quote tells you, it's interesting because it is an allusion to the fact that they could go over the tax line, and because of that, they could use what's left of their mid-level exception. They're not going to duck the tax in all circumstances. It just wasn't worth it for James Ennis in particular. So as far as the test, I would say you call it the James Ennis test. Is it better than James Ennis as far as that 10th, 11th man, that spot on the bench? And if it is, then conceivably the Rockets could be open to paying a small tax this year and maybe even a repeater down the line, or worrying about being below the tax if even a small amount of repeater is enough of a deterrent that's 2-3 years from now as far as consideration. So the point is, there are some circumstances where it appears the Rockets would be willing to go back over the luxury tax this year. It remains to be seen if one of those comes to fruition, but I don't think that Fertitta would say it if it was 100% a lie. Now, I think some of it's exaggerated. Again, Ennis is perfectly useful. I don't buy that the luxury tax had nothing to do with it. But considering his past statements on the repeater tax, the fact that so many other teams are also trying to avoid it, and the fact that we know the Chris Paul contract locked in stone for the next 4 years, it would have been very easy to say, hey, this year, while it's frustrating, it doesn't really cost us anything in terms of rotation players, and this gives us flexibility to spend in the future and not have to worry about the tax. That would have been a perfectly logical and rational way for Fertitta PR-wise to approach the situation. And that may still happen. But to keep the door open, because one thing that clearly is a big deal, as evidenced by the fan reaction, is managing expectations. To keep the door open to potentially going back over the tax, it doesn't guarantee that they're going to do it. But to me, it's not something that they would say or do if the door was completely closed. So we have to see if Daniel House, are they open to offering the mid-level exception to him? Is there someone else that we're not aware of yet as far as potentially being on the market that could be worthy of that? But I do think it tells you, and it's probably a quality over quantity. I doubt the Rockets are looking to sign, say, two players because both of them aren't going to play. I think Fertitta is honest in his comments about the rotation and the Rockets being unable to promise minutes. So I think you're probably looking at one signing for a little bit more than the minimum rather than two guys at the minimum or a little bit above, something like that, because one of those wouldn't play. So what I think it tells you is that they're at least open to a deal, be it now or more likely around March 1st, the final buyout deadline, that could push them back over. Will it happen? I don't know, but at least it has more options for Houston as we look to fortifying the end of this bench and finalizing the roster that will be out there once the playoffs start, assuming the Rockets qualify, of course, in mid-April. So to me, that's the primary takeaway from Fertitta's interview. There are some more immediate takeaways or ramifications of that strategy as well, which we'll get to in just a moment in segment two of our usual three-point show. Jumping back into Tuesday's program, wrapping up a number of interviews, news items, gossip pieces involving Tillman Fertitta, the Rockets front office, James Harden. Basically, we can call this a rumor roundup. We spent segment one discussing Fertitta's comments and his openness, according to Jonathan Fagan in the Houston Chronicle, to potentially going back over the luxury tax, saying that there was a move, and while he didn't outright say the name, I think it's pretty clear that he's referring to Markieff Morris, that if it had worked out, it would have put the Rockets back over the tax, which leads you to believe that there are at least options out there for the Rockets that are bigger than just trying to scrape by with your current nine-man rotation and just patchwork as far as the remainder with whatever minimum or 10-day contracts that you could conceivably get to fill out your roster. And as stated at the end of the last segment, I think it's clearly a quality over quantity thing. I don't think it's that the Rockets are necessarily looking for two rotation caliber players in terms of a veteran plus Daniel House Jr., because Houston's acutely aware that you're not going to be able to play, barring major injuries, all of those guys. So what's really the point? No, I think it's that you're looking for one particular player who conceivably could jump someone for rotation minutes, or at least in the right circumstances. Maybe it's Daniel House and you can use it to get him on a 2 or 3 year deal, which is something you wanted all along. Maybe it's a veteran like Markieff Morris, who clearly Houston tried to land. I just don't think there was as clear a fit in terms of minutes and role as there was in Oklahoma City. We covered that a lot in last Friday's show. Well, in combination with Fertitta's comments, the other interesting thing is the salary cap news that broke courtesy of David Weiner, Rockets capologist with Clutch Fans. We've had him on the show before, Beam and Thog on Twitter, who did some digging into the league's collective bargaining agreement and confirmed after talking with some of his sources that the Rockets, as of this Thursday, while they are required to add two players after the deadline trades on Thursday the 7th, that put the Rockets down to 12 as far as their current roster, you have to be up to 14. We thought going in that one of those two contracts they have to add could be of the 10-day variety, that one would have to be fully guaranteed by the 21st. That is not the case. As it turns out, it's complicated as to why. If you want to understand the true ramifications, you can go to David's timeline at Beam of Thog. But the long story short is that both of these contracts they give out by Thursday could be 10-day types. And as far as potential options, look, you can go any number of directions. It wouldn't shock me if Nick Young, Corey Brewer, those are swingmen that the Rockets have had interest in before that are probably available for 10-day type deals. Maybe Bobby Brown, old friend of not just the team but the podcast. Who knows? It's not like there's an immediate rotation spot, so you're probably looking for a veteran. And I doubt they're truly going the developmental route because it's so short. If you sign a 10-day, they could ultimately be jettisoned after 5 days, like James Nunnally was in January, to make room for Kenneth Faried, because basically you're just buying time until a bigger buyout name gets on the market. Maybe if they want to go a little bit bigger, Omri Caspi could be a target. We mentioned earlier in the week some of the backup fives, but I think as far as your bigger possibilities, if it's a big name, like say a Gortat, I don't know if they'd sign for a 10-day. They're probably going to hold out for a minimum deal because they have enough interest. As far as 10 days, it's probably going to be not guys who are bought out, but guys who have been kind of sitting around and waiting for an opportunity. They're going to be desperate enough to take the shorter contracts. And while in theory they could go younger, I mentioned the developmental side earlier, I just personally be a little bit surprised because right now both of their two-way slots are occupied by Daniel House Jr. and Vince Edwards. And with those spoken for and this roster spot so temporary, then with no real avenue to keep them long-term, I'm not really sure how much sense it makes to bring a developmental guy into a role that's so spotty that's basically just going to be practice and playing sparingly if there's an injury. That's why I tend to think he'll be more of a named veteran, but who knows? The Rockets, it's 10-day slots. They could go any number of directions with this, and some of it, of course, will just come down to who says yes. Actually, let me clarify one of the earlier names I dropped. I was looking at the list. Omri Caspi jumped out as a possibility. I saw Jonathan Fagan speculate that as well, but he actually had surgery for a torn meniscus a couple of weeks ago, so he would not be even available until late March or early April, which makes no sense as far as a 10-day. So if he were an option, that would be as a buyout later in the year or potentially a 10-day right at the tail end of the season, certainly not right now. Anyway, though, to get back to the main point, which is why the Rockets and what it means that they can potentially fill both roster spots that they are required to fill by Thursday via 10 days instead of one of those at least having to be a fully guaranteed contract. The point is that it buys you more flexibility because the true deadline for buyouts is March 1st. So if the Rockets are not enamored with their best available option now, and they do have Daniel House Jr. in-house, but he's not going to go anywhere because they control his rights. They can be patient with him, other than, of course, the on-court impact, whatever that is, of not having him around. But clearly, there are at least some options that they view as potentially superior. Like, I think it's fair to say that they viewed Marquis Forrest as superior because they were apparently willing to invest in him a week ago. What this effectively does is it allows the Rockets to buy time until the end of February. Because if they give out 10-day contracts on Thursday, that's the 21st, then the 10 days, that's going to cover you into early March, which, by the way, if a player is released by March 1st to be playoff eligible, he would clear waivers on March 3rd, which, coincidentally, happens to be the end of the 10-day contract period that you would sign these two players for on Thursday. So it's not to say that there's no chance of a guaranteed contract with Daniel House or any other free agent on Thursday. Of course, it's possible. But unless it's a player that you really like, and in the case of House, perhaps on your terms, then to me, this news coupled with Fertitta's statement that the Rockets are willing, or hinting at least, that they're willing to invest under the right circumstances to go back over the tax, it tells you that, again, it's quality over quantity, and if the right option isn't available now, then the Rockets can use those 10-day slots to basically punt back the deadline until March. At some point, I do think they'll give out at least one fully guaranteed deal because it can't hurt. They do have room, assuming Capella misses at least one of his incentives, which is a pretty safe bet, to add a guaranteed contract and stay below the tax, even if that's a requirement. So there's no reason not to give out a guaranteed deal. It's just there's also no reason to do it at this point unless it's a guy you really want, because who knows, the market might be better by the time you get to the true deadline of March 1st for the buyouts. So unless the Rockets get the guy and or on the terms that they want this week, what this indicates is that you're more likely to see just a couple of temporary band-aids. And who knows, if you sign, I mentioned, you know, Nick Young, Corey Brewer, just spitballing, one of these 10-day types, and then they light the world on fire and play really well, it's unlikely to even get an opportunity, but who knows, injuries happen. If something happens where they're a good fit, then yeah, of course you could keep those guys. But more than likely, what I think you're looking at is a situation in which you're buying time until the deadline, and the Rockets did not necessarily know they had that time, or at least we didn't on the outside when evaluating this situation on the trade deadline day, when we knew they'd have 14 days to get their roster back to 14. Well, since the 14 can include two two-way contracts, effectively that buys the Rockets until the true deadline of the buyout period at March 1st. So as far as what it all means, it doesn't rule out anything on Thursday. Perhaps the leverage of it can potentially force some action as far as Daniel House Jr. and his agent, but it's less likely for the Rockets to have to tip their hand than we had thought a few days ago. In reality, what this allows them to do is be patient, and if the right player and or deal is not there on Thursday, it's not going to come until the following week, March 1st, to where the Rockets truly have to make a decision, because by that point, everything will be on the table. They do have a bit more time than we thought, and so to me, that's the real key takeaway, is that barring something coming together at the last minute, at this point, I'm more expecting the Rockets to just go the Band-Aid route and kick the can down the road until late February, early March, to truly decide what you're going to do with inevitably at least one roster spot fully guaranteed being given out. Final thoughts as we wrap up Tuesday's show, and I buried this to the third segment by design. I've been asked a lot on Twitter at Ben Dubose the last few days about James Harden and various gossip pieces that have been out there, really tracing back to Saturday, I think it was, the players' practice where Steph Curry was mic'd up and he was talking to, I believe, one of the coaches about something that Harden allegedly said to him in the locker room one-on-one. And you can Google it if you want to see exactly what was said. I'm hesitant to quote it word for word because, number one, it's a bit muffled, the audio, and it's like a game of telephone. It's not even that we're quoting Harden here through this muffled audio. It's we're quoting Steph Curry's version of what Harden allegedly said. And of course, Curry has a bit of a reason to stir the pot, should he choose to do so. The Warriors and the Rockets definitely have a bit of a rivalry history to them. But even if taken at face value, the gist of the comments are that Harden is not entirely happy with the way the Rockets have been playing. The word, I believe, Curry used to sum it up was hero ball. And of course, that's been a hot topic over the past week, or really several weeks, with how Harden's played. It's picked up at the All-Star break, because that's what we do, big picture reflections. But really, for the past really 31 games now, the second longest streak in NBA history, scoring 30-plus points, the 61 at Madison Square Garden. Oftentimes it comes on very elevated shot figures. And we all know why. The Rockets have had so many injuries. Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, Clint Capella all missing time and not a lot of shot creators behind them, that if the Rockets are going to win games, that's the only way to keep them afloat. And Harden has addressed the subject head on. I mean, in the past, Kobe Bryant has said that it's not conducive to winning titles, and folks asked Harden about it. And James basically said, I agree, it's not. It's just something that they have to do right now to win games. And then once CP3, once Capella, once everyone gets back and fully integrated, they can hopefully transition back to the style that they want to play with, and perhaps the shot distribution as well. As far as what this means for the Curry comments, the reason that it's a big deal to note that history is that we have no idea, through the very limited context and scope of what Stephen Curry said in his muffled, mic'd-up interview with a coach, whether Harden's comments were generally speaking about the system when everyone is healthy, or if it was, and I view this as much more likely, that it was in the context of the recent injuries and the way the Rockets have had to play over the past 2 months, not by design, not because Mike D'Antoni thinks that this is the way to win a title, but because they had to, because they had no other choice if they want to win games, because without Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, Clint Capella, at least two of those three, and sometimes all three being out, the Rockets just not really having enough depth of shot creators, especially in a very tough schedule. We can go on and on about the big-name teams the Rockets had to face, and many times they've somehow beaten because of this historic outburst from Harden. So without knowing more about the conversation, it's impossible to know if it was about the system as a whole, even when everyone is healthy, or, and I view this as more likely because it chives with comments he said on the record to those of us in Houston, including about the Kobe Bryant comments, that it's about the context of the injuries and how the Rockets have had to play, and that's not going to last. He said it, the Rockets have said it, because everyone's going to get back healthy, and they hope that once we have that foundation of Harden, Chris Paul, and Clint Capella all healthy and back in rhythm, they'll get back to the version they were last year when I think they were, what, 44-5 or whatever the record was when all three of those guys played. Now, I'm not going to be oblivious and completely ignore the possibility that it's something deeper, but I don't see why you need to worry about that now. The Rockets know how successful they were a year ago with this particular style. A hamstring away, they've come by far closer to knocking off Golden State in the Durant era than anyone else ever has. So to me, it seems to work out pretty well, and Harden, D'Antoni, all of them seem to be in agreement when discussing that, and at this point, the Rockets are healthy, and they're focused on making their run. If for some reason that falls short, then in the offseason, sure, everything can and should be reevaluated, and if James Harden wants to change something, he's not going anywhere, let's be clear, even if he's allegedly unhappy, which is an absurd stretch that he definitely did not say. I have seen First Take and the Stephen A. Smiths of the world trying to make a story out of it. Well, he signed for the next 4.5 years at more than $40 million a year. He's going nowhere. What the potential ramifications are in the worst case scenarios is that, you know, because other than the owner, Tillman himself, Harden is the most powerful man in the franchise. So if he wanted roster or organizational changes, could he dictate those? Sure, but number one, I think that's an extreme stretch now based on 20 seconds of a muffled interview that we're only hearing basically a game of telephone, the Stephen Curry version of. But down the road, could there be if things don't work out as well? Sure, but that goes without saying. If the results in the postseason don't match what happened a year ago, and of course the Rockets are capped out and they don't really have that many avenues to upgrade their roster in terms of players, could they look at doing something different stylistically? Of course, but we already knew that. So I don't really see any reason in worrying about that now. I think the Rockets are fully focused on making the best of this roster now that it's finally healthy, starting Thursday in LA, and they're going to be focused 100% on that. And beyond that, as far as what happens down the road, James Harden is pretty media savvy, and he understands how much power he holds. His interview today, even though we didn't glean too much from it with Rachel Nichols of The Jump, I mean, look how much folks are talking about it. If he wants to make a statement, I'm pretty sure he's not going to just say something in private to Stephen Curry and try and exert leverage or a power play through a game of telephone that accidentally gets leaked through an in-shirt mic or whatever it is. Harden can speak up, and I'm sure he will, if there's something that he wants to change or he thinks is not conducive to winning. He hasn't, which again leads me to believe that a lot of these issues that have been talked about, they're nothing different than what we've heard for the last month, which is that, no, this is not how we want to play. It's just how we have to play with the roster in its current state. And down the road, they hope to change that. Now, if things do go back to the way they expect them to, as far as the roster and the results don't equal what happened a year ago, could there be changes in the offseason? Not necessarily in terms of a coach or a staff member leaving, but more stylistically? Sure, I think if you fall short of expectations, everything should be and will be reevaluated. But in terms of whether it's a story now, no, not at all, because we have no idea if that's even what Harden's talking about. My guess, my strong suspicion, is that it's just about the injuries. Not going to say there's nothing to it. Of course, it could eventually happen. But if it does, it won't be because of anything that happened here. It'll be because of falling short of expectations in the playoffs. And if that's the case, it's not like there's any reason to fear changes at that point, because clearly, without much room as far as cap flexibility, trade assets to improve your roster organically, then yeah, maybe you should look at doing things differently. But that's a conversation we can have in May and June if the Rockets fall short of expectations in the playoffs. For now, it's a non-story. It's overblown. Ignore it. It's all noise. Stephen A. Smith, Max Kellerman, they need something to talk about. We've got other things that are much more substantive that we can focus our attention on, and that's what I would strongly encourage all of us to do. Anyway, with that, that's where I'll wrap up this Tuesday episode. As always, I appreciate you guys so much for tuning in. And if you want more content before our next show, the best place to get it, of course, is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. Show is on there at Locked On Rockets. But also, don't forget, we've got an email address, lockedonrockets@gmail.com, a Facebook account, facebook.com/lockedonrockets, a website, lockedonrockets.com. All those ways that you can interact with me. You can access our prior content. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, inquire about how to become a potential sponsor. Don't hesitate to reach out. Any of those are ways that, again, beyond just accessing our content, you can interact with me and let me know if we're pleasing you or if there's things that we can do a little bit better. Also, I mentioned the advertising possibility. Even if you can't do that yourself, then wherever you listen to our podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, so on and so forth, beyond just listening, please subscribe, please leave a 5-star review. That's how you can help us look attractive to potential advertisers and keep the business model rolling as the only daily podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. So with those plugs complete, this is where we'll break it on this Tuesday evening. As always, thanks so much for listening, and please come back soon for more episodes right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.